For NPR Music, this is Alt Latino. I'm Jasmine Garz.
And I'm Felix Contreras. The music you're hearing right now is Aguanile from Willy Colon, and it's part of the soundtrack to actor John Leguizamo's one-man show, Ghetto Cloud. He's on tour with the show, and he's joining us from Miami to share the music that inspired him.
John, welcome to Alt Latino.
Thank you for having me. Isn't that a great piece?
Oh, my God. Oh. Listen to that.
With all the animal sounds, the jungle, you gotta love, and then the drums kills me. It's a Willy Colon track, but it's Hector Lavoe singing. What a voice, man. Is that the voice of an angel?
Or the devil.
Both is better. Both is always better. It just transports you. When musicians were real musicians.
I think we'd all agree with that. John, I want to take you back to your 1993 one-man show, Spikorama. And yeah. One of the many characters you play is this young Hispanic man who dreams of being an Elizabethan actor. He's one of my favorite characters. And he bleaches his hair blonde and he puts on these blue contact lenses. And there's this really funny bit where he opens his bedroom window and all this salsa and mambo is playing outside of his house. And he says, it's really hard being an Elizabethan actor in Jackson Heights. And I'm just wondering what music was playing in your house and outside your window when you were a kid.
Oh, my gosh. Well, it was a lot of salsa outside, you know, and merengue. Every blue moon, a cumbia piece would also pass by because there was also a lot of Colombians in the neighborhood. But it was a medley because, you know, I grew up in Jackson Heights, which is like what was considered at the time by New York Magazine the biggest melting pot in the United States or possibly anywhere in the world. So you had Dominicans, Puerto Ricans, Colombians, Chileans, Argentines. You had Ashkenazi Jews, Sephardic. You had Jamaicans, Germans, Italians. Everybody lived there. It was incredible. And you heard sounds all over the place and music. And it was just such a cultural, incredible cross-pollination.
Was there a particular song that your parents loved or that your mom used to sing or your dad?
Yeah. Well, my mom, you know, she's Colombian. So it was always some kind of cumbia piece that she loved, and it would be something like Era la Piragua, and my father, I guess it was always something Hector Lavoe-ish, or algo de Willy Colon or Tito Puente.
Now, is that when you first heard some of that Fania recordings and some music that you use in your show?
Yeah, it was everywhere. It was at every house party. There'd be some Fania All-Stars piece, you know, with Pedro Navaja, de Rubén Blades. And, you know, you would always roll up the carpet, move the table, and everything would end up in a dance with a big mix of, you know, salsa, cumbia, and merengue. And maybe some vallenato sometimes. But, that's the music that was out of the soundtrack to my youth, was at every party and every club was salsa.
Thank you. You know, what was interesting to me is, like, I'm Mexican-American, I'm Chicano, I grew up in California, and by the time this music came out, you know, it was something, it struck me as that it meant something for East Coast Puerto Ricans and Cubans, but it meant something different out in California for a lot of the Mexican-American Chicano people. Well, you know, it was more like a sign of progressive thought in that, you know, we grew up with rancheras and mariachi and accordions, and then all of a sudden you hear this music with, like, jazz sensibility and all the congas and timbales. And personally, I mean, I remember very distinctly walking into a ballroom where a friend of mine, I was playing soccer with this guy, he says, yeah, I play drums in this band, and we went to go check it out, and there was a guy playing, I don't remember what tune it was, but he was playing that Afro-Cuban wajeo, that dun 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 dun. And it struck me, and I just fell in love with the music, and so did this small little group of Chicano friends that I had.
But, you know, I think it was the same thing for us, too, because it was a revolutionary call. It was a call for Puerto Ricans and Cubans and Dominicans and the few Colombians that were there at the time. Of a sense of pride and a sense of, like, we contribute and we're coming up with something new, revolutionary, and I think that's what salsa had. It was a call to pride at the time in New York City, you know, filling up Yankee Stadium and all these Fania All-Star live recordings. It was such pride to be Latin, and it was a call to be proud.
We were actually just talking with Felix right before we got into the studio about Pedro Navaja, and I asked him about the connection with the famous song Mac the Knife, and Felix was telling me that it's modeled after Mac the Knife.
The Bertolt Brecht piece.
Correct.
About this scam artist or killer. I'm not sure how severe it was. I don't remember the text. But Ruben Blades is a poet, man. I mean, Ruben wrote it, right?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, yeah. You know, he's an incredible poet, singer, president of Panama, wannabe. He almost made it.
Right. Let's hear that track. This is Ruben Blades doing his song, Pedro Navaja.
Por la esquina del viejo barrio lo vi pasar con el tumbao que tienen los guapos al caminar, las manos siempre en los bolsillos de su gabán, pa' que no sepan en cuál de ellas lleva el puñal. Usa un sombrero de ala ancha de medio lado y zapatillas por si hay problemas salir volado, lentes oscuros pa' que no sepan que está mirando, y un diente de oro que cuando ríe se ve brillando. Como a tres cuadras de aquella esquina una mujer va recorriendo la acera entera por quinta vez, y en un zaguán entra y se da un trago para olvidar que el día está flojo y no hay clientes para trabajar. Un carro pasa muy despacito por la avenida, no tiene marcas pero todos saben que es policía. Pedro Navaja, las manos siempre dentro del gabán, mira y sonríe y el diente de oro vuelve a brillar. Mientras camina pasa la vista de esquina a esquina, no se ve un alma, está desierta toda la avenida. Cuando de pronto esa mujer sale del zaguán y Pedro Navaja aprieta un puño dentro del gabán. Mira pa' un lado, mira pa' el otro y no ve a nadie, y a la carrera pero sin ruido cruza la calle. Mientras tanto en la otra acera va esa mujer refunfuñando, pues no hizo pesos con qué comer. Mientras camina del viejo abrigo saca un revólver esa mujer y
va a guardarlo en su cartera pa' que no estorbe. Un 38 Smith & Wesson del especial, que carga encima pa' que la libre de todo mal. Y Pedro Navaja, puñal en mano, le fue pa' encima. El diente de oro iba alumbrando toda la avenida. Quiso fácil mientras reía, el puñal le hundía sin compasión. Cayó en la acera mientras veía a esa mujer que revólver en mano y de muerte herida. Ay, le decía, yo que pensaba, hoy no es mi día, estoy sala. Pero Pedro Navaja, tú estás peor, tú estás en nada.
Felix and I have this conversation a lot about salsa today. Do you follow any salsa today? Like salsa that is made and recorded today.
Yeah, you know, I hate to be a purist.
Go ahead, be a purist.
Seriously. I know, I have a hard time with modern salsa. I mean, there's some few tracks that I dig now and then, but I mean, that Funny All-Star was a... I mean, it's like I love modern jazz, but nothing will be like the same as the bebop era. And the same thing. I mean, there was a couple of 80s pieces that I love. You know, romantic salsa, de Eddie Santiago, what was it? The sexy the Lalo Rodriguez, Devórame Otra Vez. I mean, that kind of stuff. I dug. There's only a few 80s type of salsa singers that I dug.
Well, we're laughing here on this side because we have this conversation all the time because, you know, there's a little bit of an age difference between Jasmine and I, you know, I'm convinced that, like you said, like that was the high water mark for the music in that style. Things happened. You know, you can't, I don't think we can cast aside the music of Marc Anthony Meigs and some of these other singers, but still,
Tito Nieve,
you know, but there's still that era, it was just...
Like you can't improve on perfection.
You know, it was just so good, man.
But acting was better then, too. I mean, come on, the 70s acting was the best American film era in the world. It was the golden era. There was just magic happening in New York. And in America, especially New York, because that's where, you know, Pacino, De Niro, Dustin Hoffman, Gene Hackman. I mean, that's where it was all happening. And music-wise and rock and roll-wise, it was just Patti Smith and the Ramones and, you know, Billy Joel. It was all happening in New York. It was an incredible cradle of civilization.
Well, I think that's really interesting that you brought up that this cradle of civilization and this moment, because... You must have a complicated relationship with that era because you've also been vocal about the fact that there were really not a lot of opportunities for Hispanics in showbiz at that time. And you, back in 2003, you spoke to our colleague, Mandalit del Barco, and you know, you said that when you would go to auditions at a certain point, it would always be you and the same guys. It would be Benicio del Toro, Benjamin Bratt, Esaí Morales, and you know, there would be parts looking for gang leaders or drug dealers or janitors or murderers. And we have a clip from your show Freak that we really liked. It's basically what's happening in this part of the show is that your uncle takes you as a very young kid to see a musical and you're super bored and then all of a sudden something happens.
I could be out there with my friends just flexing, having a good time. But here I am at this musical. Chorus line. And all of a sudden, I heard the name Morales on stage. And there was this Latin person there. And she ain't have a gun in her hand or a hypodermic needle. And she wasn't a hooker or a maid. So it was kind of hard to tell if she was Latin.
When I started auditioning in the 80s, mid-80s around that time, yeah, it was really rough. I mean... Here I was, I had gone to college and educated myself and all the things that, every role that was available was just really degrading in the meaning and it just never improved. But this sort of closed outlet forced me to write my own stuff and create my own stuff. So that obstacle was great for me because otherwise I don't think if I would have had any success or the ability to keep on, I don't know if I would have written. You know, I don't think I've ever sat down and go, look, I got to change things because I can't take it anymore. You know, I got to that point kind of like network. Mm-hmm. I'm mad as hell. I'm not going to take it anymore. Right. So I'm going to write my own stuff and show people the Latin people that I know, the Latin people that I love, and the culture that everybody's misrepresenting.
And I was just thinking about how recently ABC got into hot water for this show that it's been canceled, mostly because it was a pretty bad show. It's called Work It. And they got into hot water because the Puerto Rican character had a line in which he said, "Well, I'm Puerto Rican. I'd be great at selling drugs." And what I want to ask you is, do you feel like things have improved? Have things gotten better in the way Hollywood portrays Latinos?
Well, things were improving vastly until the recession came. And then the recession came and all of a sudden everything, the clock turned backwards because studios got very afraid. They didn't have any money. And, you know, they started just relying on what they knew, you know, just white actors and all the same white actors. And all of a sudden Black and Latin people started disappearing from movies. And television, thank God, is a lot more, is still healthy, and it's much more progressive, and they're making inroads everywhere. I mean, I still think things are backwards because we're 55.4 million people. We've got over $1 trillion of buying power in this country, and we're just not represented correctly or enough for my taste. You know, there's so much talent out there, so many great directors, so many great writers, And they still say ridiculous things in Hollywood, because Hollywood is kind of, I'm going to be bold to say this, but there's kind of an apartheid in L.A. You know, Latin and Black people live in separate neighborhoods far away from the studio heads that are making the decisions, who live in gated communities. And the only transaction they have with Latin and Black people is people who serve them. Huh. And when I go there, I'm appalled that everywhere I go, every fancy restaurant I'm taken out to be wined and dined, you know, all the help, the valet and the waiters and the busboys are all Latin, and everybody else in the restaurant is all white. It's like, where am I? Am I in South Africa? I don't get it. So I think that's part of the problem and what's been holding things back. If Hollywood was in New York, it'd be a totally different situation.
You think so?
Mm-hmm. You see Latin people, rich Latin white people, poor white people. You see everybody every day, and you're forced to interact, and you're forced to challenge all your stereotypes of everybody.
Right.
Do you think to a certain extent it's an issue of writers too? I mean, that there's not enough, like Hollywood isn't taking in enough Latin writers, because I'm sometimes amazed at some of these shows that don't have Latin writers on them, but they have Latin actors on them.
I mean, you definitely need the Latin writers to give you the honest perspective. Yeah, I mean, it all needs to improve. It really does. I mean, I do my one-man shows and I travel across the country, Texas, L.A., San Francisco, Miami, New York, and then you got Mexicans, Salvadorians, Guatemalans, Hondurans, Colombians, Cubans, Dominicans, Puerto Ricans, and everybody's coming to the show and they're digging in and having a great time and paying crazy dollars. We're hungry for stories about ourselves told in an accurate, authentic, and elevating kind of way.
You know, I think there's a parallel between what was going on with Fania and how they took control of the means of production. And created an artistic statement that was a reflection and a vision of that community, of that the Latino community on the East Coast, but sort of the Latino community in general. And I think maybe that's what's lacking in Hollywood, just being able to take, because it's so expensive to do that. Making records and making a record company that can compete on a certain level is one thing, but making movies and distributing them and all the advertising promotion, it's cost prohibitive. But I'm wondering if you see a parallel between what Fania did and what's lacking in Hollywood.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what's so fascinating. Look, you had in the 60s, you had this incredible, you know, fountain of music created for people, by a people. Salsa, you know, and it was done in New York. And you could, right, the thing is, it's much more affordable to do that than it is to make a movie or put up a play. It's much more prohibitive, and definitely that's part of the sort of the obstacle. And because we're making so many inroads in sports too, and in sports it's easy because you measure statistics.
Sure.
Right.
And you go, this player is better than that player. Oh, he happens to be Latin. Well, we got to use him because those numbers speak louder than anything else, the statistics. In acting, it's hard. It's hard to say what actor's better, who, because it's all unmeasurable. You know, it's hard to say who's better, who's not, who's going to represent better. And so that it's all the money and the unmeasurable ability of act. You can't measure acting, you know. And that's the problem. It's just, luckily TV is trying to catch up. You know, there's a lot of Latin leads and a lot of cable shows and regular TV, but movies are going backwards. You know, every movie's about either something in the past. Everything is going back to when there were no Latin or black people. They're all period pieces, like we didn't exist, but we did, but you know.
Right.
But it's easier for them to exclude us that way. And, you know, Mad Men and all these movies.
Right.
And it's, the rest is comic books, you know, so it's so weird how we just can't find a way to break into those pictures.
Let's see, let's just play a music track so we can think about some of that stuff.
John, I didn't mean to bring it down.
No, that's okay. Part of what we're talking about, you know. Let's bring it back to the music a little bit. From the album soundtrack, which track do you want to hear?
Oh, how about my La Lupe? Oh my God, that voice.
Wow.
All
right,
that voice. I mean, just the dissonance and the minor chords, it's just so beautiful. Very complex piece.
Igual que en un escenario, finges tu dolor barato. Tu drama no es necesario. Ya conozco ese teatro. Mintiendo, qué bien te queda el papel. Después de todo parece que esa es tu forma de ser. Yo confiaba ciegamente en la fiebre de tus besos. Mentiste serenamente.
John, you know, when I hear La Lupe and I hear these lyrics that are just so they're anguished and they're poisoned and they're feisty, and you know, igual que en un escenario finges tu dolor barato.
I love that word, finge. Oh man.
You know,
you fronter, you faker.
You're faking yeah. Your cheap pain, and it's so mean and hurt. It, you know, she's obviously really genuinely hurt, and
but it's so, it captures that Latin spirit of our love of drama. You know what I mean? You know we love the drama, man. I mean, there's not been one fight in my house that my parents didn't overact. You know,
right.
That they would try to get an Oscar somehow.
From the living
so
room.
So melodramatic and powerful, and we know what that's about.
Nobody does a love song or a melodramatic song like Latinos, in my opinion.
No, nobody goes that far. It's so operatic.
Our lives are operatic. But I do want to ask you, you know, when I hear these songs, I feel like, wow, if you don't understand Spanish or you don't understand Latin culture, you're really missing like 50% of it. And I wonder, I mean, how do you feel about that with your one-man shows?
Well, I don't mind. I don't mind them missing out on that. I think that intuitively, you know, American audiences pick up on the intuitive part of it. You know, they get a sense of what the feeling is. They don't get the lyrics. But I think that's part of the fun of going to the shows, is feeling other. That's part of the message of my show, is that I felt other and my people felt other. And why can't you feel other? It's okay. You know, it's okay to be other and not have to make everything so homogenized.
Especially when the other, there's so much of the other. You know what I mean?
Especially, yeah. You know, and I think it's an okay feeling. I mean, we don't all have to understand everything. I mean, it's good to be, you know, just be present and witness it.
Perdona que no te crea. Lo tuyo es puro teatro.
Okay, John, we've spoken to a lot of artists who at a younger age rebelled against their parents' music and didn't really embrace their Latino heritage. How much of that character in Spicorama was you as a kid?
It was interesting because there was a little part of me in that character. I mean, more I was addressing people who were running away, you know, who were trying to pass and running away from being Latin, because it was a time where, you know, everybody was wearing the blue contacts and bleaching their hair blonde and staying out of the sun and hoping that they could pass. And I kind of rebelled against that. But, yeah, of course I rebelled against my parents too, you know, but I rebelled with hip-hop, you know. That was hip-hop and a little bit of up rock and some disco too. You know, that was more my music.
Like hip hop wise, who were you listening to in hip hop when you were a kid?
You know, Grandmaster Flash, Afrika Bambaataa, back in those days. You know, Kool Moe Dee, D-Nice, KRS-One. You know, those are the people that Red Alert. Remember those names?
Yeah.
Slick Rick.
But what year would that be?
This would be the early 80s.
If you had to pick an Afrika Bambaataa song for us to listen to, what would you pick? Or one of those guys?
Yeah. Well, Kool Moe Dee, I love him the most of everybody. Just, you know, he was a solo and act, and his voice just stood out. And I got to say, I think it's called How You Like Me Now.
Okay, let's listen to Kool Moe Dee. This is How You Like Me Now.
All aboard the night train.
Shaking your head, dancing instead of sitting. The rhymes kick, the beat's hitting you just like a home run, slamming like a slam dunk. Ride the wave, James Brown, gay funk. It happened to James like it happened to me. How you think it feel to see another MC get paid? Using my rap style, and I'm playing the background. Meanwhile, I ain't with that. You can't forget that. You took my style. I'm taking it back, coming back like Return of the Jedi. Sucker MCs in the place. I could only rock rhyme and only rock crowds, but never rock records. How you like me now? Now, brothers are riding me like a pony. I'm no phony, I'm the only real macaroni. Playing the mic like it's supposed to be played. New Jacks, you all should have stayed out of the business. What is this, amateur night at the Apollo? Get off this stage, I'm enraged. Just like a lion trapped inside of a cage. I'm the real king, rap is a jungle. I never understood how could one go to a party, watch me stand around and jock me, become a rapper, then try to rock me. Scheming like a demon, you're screaming and dreaming. I'm from the old school, I used to see men die for less, but I'm not living that way. I let my mic do the talking and let the music play.
What do your kids listen to? Do you guys have any common tastes?
My son loves the Beatles and John Lennon.
Really?
Yeah. And my daughter likes more, you know, pop 10, you know, the pop 10 top hit list. You know, that's what she likes more. You know, like, she loves Rihanna, she loves Nicki Minaj. My music right now is more Kanye. I'm a big fan of Biggie Smalls. You know, he's one of the great rappers of all time. They did this great article on Biggie Smalls about how every rapper has stolen some lyric off of his records.
Huh.
Especially Jay-Z. But Jay-Z admits to it, so it's all cool.
Now we're going to go back to what you're listening to now, but I do want to ask you, so you were born in Colombia, and you grew
yes.
up in New York, and then when you turned 14, you know, you were getting in so much trouble, and you were rebelling a lot, that you got sent back to Colombia, and I'm wondering if you have any musical memories from that. I mean, what was that like to be back in Colombia?
Well, it was like Survivor for me. I mean, I was a teenager. You know, I was getting a lot of play. I was very popular in school, finally, after being a ghetto nerd forever. And finally, I was popular. All the girls liked me. And then they ripped me out of my neighborhood and threw me into Colombia. And I was, you know, unpopular again and you know, not getting any. And I guess My musical choices down there was a lot of salsa and cumbia, because they dance a lot more Latin music than they did, you know, hip hop and that kind of music. So yeah, it was all salsa and cumbia. That's all I heard, and merengue now and then too.
Did you bring any of your music down there?
Yeah, I did, but nobody really dug it.
Yeah.
it was they were like, yeah, it's all right, it's all right.
Let's go back to your show, Ghetto Clown. Can you tell us what the show is about?
The show basically is about my career all the ups and downs, the battles, the shrapnel, the verbal shrapnel, and all the injuries that have been inflicted on me in this industry, and trying to make it and continue to make it. And I hope it's like this inspiring piece to youth in America, a recipe of how to make it, a formula of how to make it.
And the soundtrack, as we mentioned, there is an accompanying soundtrack called Ghetto Clown, the music from my hood. And it is on Find Your Records. What was the inspiration behind that? How did you think about weaving that particular music, that era, into your show? And what does it represent?
Well, in the show, that's obviously, I use music to delineate all the eras. So I have 60s music, 70s, 80s, until today. And the salsa was more a hearkening back to the past, you know, running away from and sort of releasing of the emotions. So that's what the salsa represents, sort of like the soul of the play. And then hip hop obviously is street culture and how I gravitated to the streets. And you know, I got some James Brown there for the 60s too.
What do you have by James Brown?
I have Sex Machine.
Oh, I love that tune.
Oh, let's listen
to
that.
Oh man, anything by that. He's a god. Oh. He's one of the gods.
Fellas, I'm ready to get up and do my thing.
Go ahead.
I want to get into it, man, you know.
Go ahead.
Like a sex machine, man.
Yeah.
Moving, doing it, you know.
Yeah.
Can I count it off?
Go ahead.
One, two, three, four. Get up.
Get on up.
Get up.
Get on up.
Stay on the scene.
Get on up.
Like a sex machine.
Get on up.
Machine.
Get on up.
Get up.
Get on up.
Stay on the scene.
Get on up.
I like a sex machine.
Get on up.
Wait a minute. Shake your arm. Then use your palm. Stay on the scene. I like a sex machine. You got to have the feeling. Sure your bone. Get it together. Right on, right on. Get up.
Get on up.
Get up.
You know, John, one thing that strikes me musically and is like what James Brown did and what people like Celia Cruz did and the Fania people did is like they played with rhythm.
They played with rhythm and they had super musicality and they were musicians and they were tested. You know what I mean? They played all the clubs and they earned their due, you know, their musical due. And also it was a really fascinating time in New York City. 50s and 60s and 70s. I mean, all the artists that were playing, the jazz musicians, all the beboppers, and all the Latin musicians, they were influencing each other and playing in each other's, you know, bands. And that was a huge inspiration that people maybe aren't aware of, how Latin people were so inspirational to jazz as well, and vice versa.
Get up.
Get on up.
Get up.
Get on up.
Get up.
Get on up.
Can we hit it right? We did one more time.
I want to take you back to what we were discussing before. You know, in Ghetto Clown, you talk about this advice you got from your beloved grandfather. He said, you know, only white Latinos make it to Telemundo. So stay out of the sun, walk on the shaded side of the street, don't even eat dark food. And I'm wondering, you know, we've been talking a lot about Hollywood, but we also should talk about the fact that Latin media is more powerful today in the U.S. than it's ever been. It's really at a peak, and I wonder what your assessment of your grandfather's words is.
Well, back then it was so true. I mean, here we are in America, and you know we hardly see each other. You see all our people on television unless it was the news,
right?
And not very positive, or Miami Vice, and we were all the villains during their Latin exploitational run. And then on Telemundo, you would go see Telemundo. You go like, well, what happened to Latin people there? Isn't that our culture? And everybody is so, you know, European looking. What happened to all the black and Latin people that I know? You know, I mean, and all the mestizos and mulatos and, mm-hmm. you know, everybody else with, you know, every mix possible, every buffet DNA that we are. And I wasn't seeing that so present. And my grandfather's words were true. You know, you got to be, you know, make sure your hair is straight enough and you're pale enough to make it.
Do you think there's a possibility for change? Because there are things like LATV, CTV, you know, there's these independent cable channels that are working, that are reaching out to Latinos, but through English language programming. You know, have you seen any of that? And what do you think of that?
Oh, I think we're the first ones. Latin people in the United States are the first ones that are going to change everything. I just feel like we have a much more clear point of view of the self-hate, and we understand what they don't understand back at home.
Mm.
And I think we're the ones that are going to change things like Mundos, using Spanglish, and you know, casting people who look more like us, you know. And I think that's what's going to be the big changes, is the Univisiones and Telemundos in the United States now. They're the ones that are being more progressive too.
Yeah, I think I really appreciate what you're saying there, because I think, you know, anyone who, you know, I came from Argentina when I was like 18, and anyone who's come from Latin America and now lives here just gets a really clear perspective about how confused and messed up that self-hatred is back home, and how, you know, it can be changed here, you know? So
Right. It's interesting how you don't really see it.
You don't.
Back home. You can't really separate it. People are saying mean things about other people, and you go, I know why you're saying that, but you don't know why you're saying those horrible things about other people, is because you don't understand your own self-hate. And people like, you know, a lot of my aunts back in the day, you could see the self-hate, like the makeup on their face was like 10 shades lighter than the makeup, than the color of their neck.
Right.
You know what I mean? And you're like, right. Why are you doing that? That's, yeah. You look like you're a mime.
Let's go back. Speaking of that, but put it in the context of the what you were talking about, the 1970s, you know, who were some of the Latino actors, or even maybe some programs? Where did you find the influence? Where did you find the motivation, the inspiration to continue on this path, or to even start out on this path? Were there any Latino actors or television shows that stuck out to you?
There wasn't a lot going on. I mean, a lot of my inspiration came from my family and my neighborhood and my friends. That's where the empowerment came and the support was. Because here I was hanging out with all these people that were cracking me up all day, and I thought they were as funny as anybody on television. And that's where I got the confidence. And then there was a few shows that helped, you know. Of course, Que Pase USA was revolutionary back in those days. You know, a show on PBS that had Spanish and English jokes at the same time, and they were speaking Spanish. It was incredible. My whole family would get together and just crack up, and it brought us all up together that we could all watch together. And then the great playwright Miguel Pinheiro, he was the first one to take street vernacular and put it in a play and tell you that. It's kind of like the birth of hip-hop. It's like, right. Here, taking street slang and making it poetry and making it literature.
Sure.
Right.
And at the same time, out in the West Coast, we had people like Luis Valdez, who was writing his plays, his theater work coming out of the experience of the United Farm Workers. And then, you know, he established his own theater, and then eventually would lead up to things, films like La Bamba. It was a different kind of experience, but roughly at the same time.
Right. You mean all the agitprop stuff, right?
Yes, in California.
Yeah. I mean, that was a powerful form of theater that I loved that Chicanos were doing. Chicanos were very, very political, the brown berets and all that. And I think that's helped New York Ricans and Latin people in New York get motivated as well, to see how organized the West Coast was. Obviously, you guys had more to deal with than we did, and I think that's what made you unify faster.
Huh.
Do you artistically and politically, I mean, do you yearn for that era, or do you think something interesting is happening now as well? I mean, you've said that independent media and theater are your favorite mediums. So how do you feel about independent Latin media and Latin theater and all that right now?
I mean, right now there's a lot of young cats out there writing and believing in themselves. There's a lot more playwrights than there ever was. And that's great, because now you have the competition to get us even to be better and better writers, because you need competition. And they believe in themselves. They all have a dream, and they all want to be writers, and for sitcoms, for movies, for theater. This guy Christopher Diaz won Best Playwright of the Year by the New York Times last year.
Huh.
And he's a Puerto Rican young cat, and he's so talented, so such a great writer. And you got all these people coming up, you know,
right,
who love theater, because you know theater is not a big paying gig for most people. So it is for me, but that's different.
Right.
Because mine's more of a, you know, it's a one-man show, so I don't have to share my cash with anybody.
I guess that leads to my next question, which is, I mean, your story is pretty amazing, and it is really, I don't know if I would say one in a million, but, you know, it's rare, and you've achieved something great and very rare, and I wonder, what is your advice to a young Hispanic who's trying to achieve the level of what you've achieved?
I think you got to spend 10,000 hours on anything, and you're guaranteed success. And do it as much as you can, man. Say yes to everything. And just find the best teachers in the world. You know, I think that's part of it. You got to find those mentors, those cloaked messengers that are gonna take you to the next level. And you got to find them, and you got to seek them out, and you know, absorb all that knowledge. Be an apprentice like in the olden days,
right,
and dedicate 10,000 hours to it, and you will have, you'll be master of your craft.
That's great advice. Let's switch gears a little bit, and what music are you listening to now? Like, who's on your playlist? Who's on your iPod right now?
I'm incredibly eclectic. You know, so I got Nina Simone. You know, she's so virtuosic, and of course I got some Biggie Smalls, and some jazz and salsa, and some classical music. I love classical music to write to. It's the only thing I can really write to.
Mm.
Is there any kind of music that you listen to, like if you're getting, maybe before the play or before a character or when you're doing a movie? I mean, is there something different
music for everything, yeah. I mean, before I do a show, I listen to a lot of hip hop, just to get my energy levels back up and get some anger going in my body.
Like, what's one hip hop song that we would catch you listening to right before you go on stage?
Definitely some Wu-Tang Clan, some ODB.
Okay.
Baby, I like it raw. Baby, I like it raw.
Ooh, baby, I like it raw. So I could take it away. Off on the natural charge, bon voyage. Yeah, from the home of the Dodgers, Brooklyn squad. Wu-Tang killer, hubby's on the swarm. Rain on your college ass disco dorm. For you to even touch my skill, you gotta go to one killer B, and he ain't gonna kill now. Chop that down, pass it all around. Lyrics get hard, quick cement to the ground. For an EMC in any 52 states, I get psycho killer Norman Bain. My producer slam, my flow is like bam. Jump on stage, and then I dip down. Ooh, baby, I like it raw. Yeah, baby, I like it raw.
What do you want to go out on from the soundtrack?
What else do I have there?
We got the Estrellas de Fania, that killer Celia Cruz and Johnny Pacheco doing Kimbara.
Oh, that's beautiful. But what's the other one? Do I got Quítate Tú? Do I have that there?
Oh, yeah. Let's see. Yeah, I do.
Oh, let's do that. I love that. It's like a roll call. How many musicians, how many singers are there? There's like four or five big singers in there.
I love the way that they sing each little verse, either to introduce themselves or try to outdo the last guy. And each one has their own distinct style, their own different flow, their own different rhythm. And the tone of their voice is all like immediately recognizable.
Yeah, it's so powerful, man. It's like a roll call. It's like an old school roll call.
Pon el medio, quítate tú.
Para que bailen los pollos,
Okay, John, it seems like you're going to be busy with the show for a while, but what's next? What's on the horizon for you? What can we expect?
Well, I got a lot of plans, man. I got a lot of plans. I'm an Ice Age 4 coming out this summer, and I'm an alien in Men in Black 3.
Awesome.
I'm shooting a pilot for ABC, this famous British show called Only Fools and Horses with Christopher Lloyd.
What's that about?
It's this British show that's a beloved British show. I'm getting all these tweets about don't wreck it. So I get all these warnings already. So you know it's really beloved when you get a lot of warnings and hate mail. It's about a grandfather and two kids. So Christopher Lloyd plays our white grandfather, and we're two Latin sons of, I guess our father was white.
Interesting. That'll be fun.
That sounds really interesting.
Yeah, for ABC. So we'll see. ABC trying to make up.
Don't wreck it.
Yeah, don't wreck it. I'm not going to wreck it.
And you are also doing your one-man show, Ghetto Clown, in Miami, Tampa, Orlando, and Connecticut this
Foxwoods,
week.
Connecticut.
Great.
Yep.
And people can buy tickets at ghettoclown.com. That's Ghetto Clown with a K. And also, I want to remind our audiences that you can find every single song we played on today's show on our website. That's npr.org/altlatino.
And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Twitter.
John Leguizamo, thank you so much for stopping by.
Oh, I had a blast. Thank you.
Will you come back next time?
I had a really good time. Yes, I will. You know, I'll be back. You won't be able to keep me away.
We're going to hold you to that, man. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
I'm Jasmine Garst.
And I'm Felix Contreras.
This has been Alt Latino.